right, here we go. I am Jeff K., host of The Jeff K. Show. Coincidentally, I mean, who could have predicted such a thing? It's pretty wild, isn't it? The planets have aligned. Truth is stranger than fiction. Jeff K., host of The Jeff K. Show. You know, that's pretty, you know, what are the chances of such a thing? Thank you guys for listening. I sincerely appreciate it. Thanks for taking the time, making the effort to find us and downloading the episode and giving it a listen. It is truly, truly appreciated. Every download is like a gift. It's like a little gift from heaven. So thank you guys for your part in that. I sincerely appreciate it. Today I thought I would do something a little bit different. I mean, I've done it before, but, you know, generally I just have a list of topics and just bounce around. But today I thought I'd try to come up with some sort of a theme. Way back in episode 3, I think, I looked yesterday just to verify, but one day later, I can't remember. I don't know what's going on. But anyway, episode 3, I believe. And if I'm wrong, you guys can, you know, get together, file a class action lawsuit if you like. That's up to you. Totally up to you. Anyway, I think back on episode 3, I told the story about how I, you know, finally had enough courage to leave my parents' house at the age of 22. And not only did I leave my parents' house, but I left the state of West Virginia all at the same time. So I told that story, the circumstances surrounding that move. And today I thought I would fast forward 4 years and tell you the story about how I left Greensboro, North Carolina. So that's where I moved. After I left West Virginia, I moved to Greensboro, and I lived there for about 4 years, and then I jumped to Atlanta, which you talk about mildly terrifying. The first jump was scary because I'd lived with my parents and I was leaving everything I knew. The only thing I'd known, I was leaving all my friends. You know, that was scary. But when you move to a place like Atlanta, which is, and I'll get to it, but that place is pretty wild. You know, that's something to deal with, you know. So I thought I'd tell that story today. And by the way, my stomach is growling. I don't know why. I just ate a big old omelet. It was made with like a load of cheese and a half and half. Oh my God. I think it was a bunker buster. And my stomach is like growling. You might be able to hear it on this recording. I hope not. But it's just almost a continuous growl. It's like, wow, wow, you know, that kind of thing. So I apologize for that. I don't know what the hell's going on. Things saying, feed me, feed me. So anyway, so I thought I'd tell that tale today. You know, like I say, I moved to Greensboro. I got a job at this record store, Peaches Tapes and Records. That's what it was originally called. And then at some point it became Peaches Music and Video, which I was completely against that name change. You know, tapes, the problem was the tapes and the records, actually. You know, now I think about it, it's probably more the records, because LPs, you know, vinyl LPs were not in vogue anymore. Everybody's moving over to cassettes and CDs, so they thought they better, you know, they don't want to sound like they were unhip, so they took the records. They changed it to music and video. I didn't like that. The more classic sound is the Peaches records and tapes, you know. So anyway, I worked there for 4 years, and the first 3 were a blast. And I'm not exaggerating. Those were perhaps the most fun. Well, definitely one of the top 2. Most fun jobs I've ever had. I liked going to work, which is, you know how rare that is. I enjoyed, in fact, I often preferred to be at work than to be, you know, to be off, you know. It wasn't work, it was fun. I liked all the people I worked with. Well, let's not, let's not get carried away. I mean, I liked most of the people I worked with, and I just liked being in that environment, just like in a record store. And this wasn't some little half-assed, you know, little indie store with, you know, dusty shelves and everything's packed to the rafters. Or it wasn't any one of these, you know, these mall stores like FYE. This is like a real record store, like a, almost like a Tower Records. So if you've ever been in a Peaches, you know, they're like big old giant expansive record stores with pretty much everything that's in print. They have it on hand, you know. So that's where I worked, and I became a manager and a buyer. I was involved in all sorts of things there, and I loved every minute of it. I was trying to learn. I wanted to work in the music industry, you know. That's what I ultimately wanted to do, and so I was trying to soak up as much, you know, soak up as much as I could and try to learn as much as I could. Some of the people that worked there were just, it was just a job. It was a cool job to have. It was a cool job to have, but I wanted to learn from it, you know? So the first 3 years were great. And then it became like retail, you know, and plus some of the original gang of people that worked there were starting to dwindle away. People were leaving, being replaced by others. So it was like a whole different vibe. And I was still involved in all the buying and all that stuff. That stuff was fun. But, you know, some of my friends that worked there, you know, moved on to other things. So it became the last year, it was like, it was retail, you know. We'd have these people coming in there like, yeah, I was looking for I'm looking for a song. I don't know the name of it, and I don't know the artist, but has something to do with love. Oh, okay. Well, thank you. Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. Just step over here. I'll show you what you're looking for, you know. So it became, you know, all these. I mean, anytime you deal with the general public, it becomes, there's a very short shelf life on that shit, you know. Anytime you have to deal with people just wandering in off the street with their numbskull questions and their dipshit personalities, you know, I mean, a little goes a long way. So I've got to the point where it wasn't the same. It was, the first 3 years were great. The last year wasn't so great. But it wasn't horrible, but I wasn't enjoying it as much as I had. So I was dating a girl named, and I'm not supposed to say girl, right? I don't know. I'm old. What do you want from me? I was dating a woman named Sharon, and I would, you know, we'd have these discussions about how things, you know, I don't like it as much as I used to, and she was getting ready to graduate from college. I think we were about 25, 26, somewhere in that neighborhood. And she took a year off here and a year off there, but she was getting ready to graduate, which is something I never did, by the way. I took a lot of years off, too. In fact, I took a year off starting in 1985 or so, 84, and I'm still on it. So anyway, she was getting ready to graduate. She wanted to work in the publishing industry. I wanted to work in the music industry. So we'd have these conversations, probably over pictures of Pabst Blue Ribbon or something down at the local tavern. And we'd plot these plans. It's like, why don't we get the hell out of here? Why don't we move to a big city and, you know, give it a shot, you know? And, you know, when you're full of beer, it's like, this is a great idea. Let's do it. Let's do it up, you know? And then the next morning, we'll be like, I don't know. Seems like a big risk, you know? So anyway, we'd have these conversations, and at some point it became real, you know? So, we ended up, you know, it was terrifying to tell you the truth. It's like, it felt weird because that job, that Peaches Records job, was like the greatest thing ever. You know, when I got that job and then I settled into it, that was like the greatest thing ever. You know, I felt like the greatest fortune in the world had fallen upon me. So the thought of going in there and, you know, voluntarily quitting it you know, that seemed, I don't know, I had a problem with that. But I went in there, I talked to Jeff Smith, who's the director of the store, and I said, listen, I think I'm gonna give you my notice. He was like, what the hell, what's going on? And I said, I think I'm moving to Atlanta. He's, what the hell? What are you going to do down there? So I'm going to try to get a job in the music industry. He was like, ha, you know, he was not exactly the most, supportive. He goes, you'll be back in 3 months. You know, thanks a lot, Jeff. Thanks for the vote of confidence. He was a great boss, but he was very frank, you know? So I gave him my notice, and we ended up, you know, while I was working this thing out, Sharon cooked up some kind of deal where we rented an apartment sight unseen over the phone. And, you know, the whole thing, it's like, I don't know. I didn't know anything about Atlanta. We went down there one time, and we went to this club. I don't remember much about it, but we drove down there. There are two main memories of this this first scouting expedition when we went down there just to check it out. And the first thing is, when we were driving down there, the highway, as we approached Atlanta, the highway just kept getting wider and wider and wider, to the point where I was like, holy shit, look at that, you know? It was like 10 lanes going in one direction, 10 lanes going in the other direction, cars going in every speed, you know. There would be cars going 40 and cars going 95 and everything in between, you know, zipping in and out of lanes. It was like, oh my God, you know. So I remember that almost made the floor of my ass fall out. And then I remember we went to some club. It was supposed to be the hippest place on the East Coast, man. It was called Club Rio. But I think by the time we got there, it was already on the downward slope. So, because it wasn't exactly packed. And we went in there, and there was some band playing. They were like some kind of Van Halen type party band, you know. They were like spandex, you know, hair metal type shit. But like very Van Halen like. And the name of this band, I don't know how I remember this stuff, but the name of this band, are you ready for this? That's right, Pink Steel. Oh man, hilarious. So they were pretty good, but there was the crowd was sparse, and the place seemed more like a disco type place. I don't know, I thought it was a rock club, but it wasn't. I mean, they had a rock band playing in there, but it felt like a dance club, you know? So anyway, those are the two things I remember about that original scouting expedition. I don't even remember where we stayed or anything. But we ended up, we went back, turned in our notice, quit our jobs, and she rented an apartment. She arranged for an apartment, sight unseen. I mean, what the hell? My parents were like, are you serious? So we had maybe like $1,500 between the two of us. We had no money. There was no money. Neither one of us had jobs down there. And we packed up all our shit, you know, and moved down there. And so we went to this apartment, and it was in a neighborhood. It looked, I don't know. I mean, it looked normal. It looked like a normal neighborhood. It was on a street called Bonaventure. And right down the block was this notorious resident hotel called the Claremont. And it was this place where you could go in there, and it was like junkies live in there, alcoholics, whores, you know. The place is just, it's like this low rent, it's like this big, it's a residence hotel where you could go in there and rent the place by the week or whatever. And so there was like all kinds of like questionable people hanging out there. There's this club in the basement called the Claremont Lounge. It was a strip club, and they were famous for having, like, and this isn't me, I'm, you know, don't shoot the messenger here, but this place was famous for having, like, ugly strippers. I'm not kidding. So it was like this ironic place to go, you know. All these hipsters went there, the Claremont Lounge. You could go in there and it'd be like celebrities in there sometimes, you know. And so anyway, that was literally on the same block as our apartment. So it looked halfway normal, but there's this, like, you know, underlying, you know, something wasn't, I don't know, something unsavory about the neighborhood. It was right off this street called Ponce de Leon, which everybody called Ponce. You know, it's just like one block. I mean, it was like you turn off Ponce and you just go a few houses down and that's where we were. And it was, there was a lot of shit going on that Ponce de Leon Avenue. That place was, you know, it was terrifying. So we went into this apartment. The place was a shithole. I mean, it was a house that was broke up into three apartments. The whole bottom floor was one apartment. Upstairs was broke up into two. So we had the front half of the upstairs. And it was, I mean, it wasn't that bad, but it was dirty, you know. And the walls looked like they hadn't been painted since, like, World War II or something. Filthy, you know, just dirty, you know. And so we went in there. I'm like, oh, my God. This is where we're going to live? Oh, my. You know, and the neighborhood felt menacing, you know. And I was like, oh, my. So I was, like, freaking out, you know. So for some reason, we walked to the grocery store. There was a grocery store, like, down. You had to walk past that Claremont scariness down to Ponce, make a right. I can't remember what grocery store it was. I don't remember what it was. Winn-Dixie, maybe, or something like that. There's a Kroger down there, too, but we didn't go there. So anyway, we walked to the grocery store, and that was, like, one of the most terrifying. I was like, this is the biggest mistake, you know. We walked by that Claremont, and there's, like, all these, like, ghostly looking, like, heroin addicts, probably. Who the hell knows? Like, all kinds of whores hanging out. Do you need a date? No, I'm good. So we walked down there, and before we got to the grocery store, this guy walked up to us and goes, "Hey, you guys interested in buying a mattress and box springs?" I was like, "What?" "No, yeah, they're real nice, you know. Just you know, they're practically new, match set mattress." I'm like, "No, I don't think so. Who buys beds off the street, you know? Like, used mattress? Oh, God. Can you imagine?" So we went into this grocery store, and there was all kinds of derelicts in there. I was like, oh, my God. We have just made the biggest mistake. I quit my job. I had this great job, and I quit it to come to this. I mean, the apartment was a shithole. The neighborhood was scary as fuck. You know, there's people trying to sell me mattresses out on the street. There's, like, heroin addicts hanging around, drunkards, you know. It's like, oh, and we were right in the center of this, man. We were at ground zero, you know. So we went and bought all our stuff, and, you know, I was terrified because the money, I knew the money wouldn't last very long. We didn't have a job, you know, what the hell? So we went, first thing we did was we cleaned that place up, you know. We swept it and wiped everything down and, you know, cleaned that place up. Then we went out and bought some paint, and we painted every square inch of we painted every wall in that place. You know, and then I can remember after we painted it, the landlord came in there, and he was like, "What the? You can't." He goes, "You should have talked to me before you did this. You need to keep these. You know, you should have painted it white if you're gonna do it. You know, you have to have neutral colors." I said, "Are you serious? You allowed us to move into this dump, and now you're giving me a hard time because we painted it, like, pale green or something? Give me a break. God. So he was giving me a bunch of shit about it. I said, well, you know, it looks 1,000 times better than what you allowed us to move into. So we got that place whipped into shape. And my car got broken into multiple times while I lived there. Like one time somebody took my I'd been to the laundromat and there was like a basket of clean clothes on the back seat. Somebody knocks the window out of my car, steals my clean clothes. Like, what the fuck? You know, who steals a guy's socks? And one of the things that they took out of there was my, this jean jacket that I had that had been perfectly worn. You know, that thing had been, I'd had that thing for several years and it was like perfect. You know, and they took that and I was pissed. But, anyway, so this place was scary. And, the whole place, oh, by the way, when your car gets broken into in Atlanta, you just call this number and it's like car break-ins, push 4. If somebody, grabbed your crotch on the subway, press 5, you know, that kind of thing. So it was all automated. I never actually talked to anybody. I mean, there's no, you know, so your car gets broken into over and over and over again. And all you do is just like call a number and it gets, you know, a few days later, they send you like some kind of police report so you can turn it into your insurance or whatever. The thing is like crazy. That place is like, you know, anything's possible. The whole city of Atlanta, it feels like anything's possible at any time. And nobody's going to care when it happens, you know? You know, it's like, it's like lawless, you know? So we were in the center of this thing. We got that place cleaned up and painted and everything. The landlord tried to give me shit about it, and I gave it right back to him. So then we found jobs, and I was working way out in Norcross is where it was called, outside the perimeter. There's this like interstate highway that runs around Atlanta. It was, it's called 285 and it's like a bypass, this big circle. In fact, there was an Atlanta Braves pitcher. He was from like the Dominican Republic or something. And he got on this 285, this big circle, and he just drove round and round and round, missed the entire game. I don't remember the whole story, but anyway, it was like, so they call that circle, which is a bypass, so you don't have to drive through the city of Atlanta, and they call that the perimeter, right? And all the hipsters say you have to live inside the perimeter, or you're not really living in Atlanta. If you live outside the perimeter, you're living in the burbs, and that's not real, you know, that's not legit, as they say. So I worked outside the perimeter, Norcross is where it was called, and out on Jimmy Carter Boulevard. And so I got a job out there. It sucked ass. It was terrible, but somehow we made a go of it. And that place was wild, Atlanta. And later after we broke up, after Sharon and I broke up, which was that's a whole other episode unto itself. But we broke up. I continued living in the apartment and she moved out. And this was like a year later. The landlord came by and he goes, listen, you guys, you're going to get some new neighbors across the hall. And I said, okay, good. He goes, they're in some kind of band or something. I said, yeah. Like them and everybody else in Atlanta. Everybody's in a band, you know. That's fine. Good. I'm happy. So these guys move in and I see them out in the hallway. I said, so you guys are in a band? Yeah. What are you guys called? Arrested Development. It's like, oh, okay. So, I was like, whatever. So, you know, you'd come up the hallway, come up the stairs and there'd be like, you know, interesting smells coming out of their apartment. You know what I'm saying? And, but they were cool. They were nice. And, so then Maybe like a few months later, their album is like the number one album in the world, and they're winning a shitload of Grammy Awards. Remember Arrested Development? God. They lived literally across the hall from me. And I was like, yeah, whatever, when the guy told me about it. And then they ended up selling like 10 million copies of their debut album. And they won a bunch of Grammy Awards and everything. They were cool, you know. I didn't spend too much time with them, but, you know, they were cool when I did. So that neighborhood was scary, and I didn't live there very long. But then we moved, after I met Tony, we moved into Little Five Points, which, you know, that was perhaps even scarier. So, but I told, you know, I didn't go back to Atlanta. I mean, I didn't go back to Greensboro with my tail between my legs like Jeff Smith predicted. So, there you go, Jeff. Take that, you know. It was tough. It was a terrible transition. It was a big risk. And I was terrified beyond belief on those first few days. It's like, oh, my God. Hey, man, you want to buy a mattress box spring? Nah, I'm good. Thank you. Let's step over this corpse here and buy some sodas here at the Winn-Dixie. So anyway, we made it work somehow, and it was quite an adventure. I'm ready to do it again. I'm going to make one more move before it's all over. Oh, yeah. So I think we're getting close to the end of this thing. So before I go, I want to remind you that if you want to double down on these episodes, it's easy to do. Just go over to patreon.com/JeffK. Jeff K. God, mispronounced my own name. Patreon, patreon.com/JeffK. Sign up for a $4 or more monthly donation, and you'll gain access to the Thursday episode, the super secret underground black market Jeff K. Show episode. It comes out every Thursday. It's only available to a self-selecting few, very small group at this point. I'd like to make it bigger. So, you know, there's room for more. So if you're interested, just go on over patreon.com/JeffK. I hope you guys enjoyed this trip down memory lane. Oh, brother. Sometimes I disgust myself. Anyway, I'm going to call it quits here, and I'll see you on Thursday. Have a great one. Bye.